Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us here on the program. We come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and p.m., and we are rebroadcast on the archive page when you go there to listen to the program. And you never know how much of an interview you're going to get, because we can only play so much on the radio broadcast, but the entire interview, I like to call it the after view. If we ran out of time in the radio program, well, guess what? There's more to the interview, and I guarantee you there'll be a lot more to this interview, as we are going to be talking today with my special guest. His name is Chris Atwood, and he is a co-author along with two others, Janet Atwood and Sylvia Dovrak, PhD, Your Hidden Riches, Unleashing the Power of Ritual to Create a Life of Meaning and Purpose. And I want to welcome you to the program today, Chris. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Richard. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Now, first of all, I have to tell you that ritual and ceremony are a big deal for me, probably because of my Catholic upbringing.
Yes.
But I also know that it's a big deal for a lot of folks who are the free thinkers, who are the evolutionary thinkers, who are the ones who are really like you and I, who are trying to create a better world. And that storytelling for one, but also ritual for another, are big parts of what our lives should be about.
Well, and Richard, you know, in many cultures, storytelling is a ritual.
Indeed. So this isn't just about this just isn't about ritual. This isn't just about some other areas of our lives. This also is dealing with our finances, or the way in which we perceive the, how do I put this? Not the currency, because, well, maybe currency in a general sense, not necessarily that which you can put in your wallet or in your pocket, but that which you acquire through your daily activities, whether it be quote unquote a job or your life's purpose. And that's part of what we're going to be talking about today, I think, is we've had programs where we've talked about life purpose, finding it and honing in on that and using that. But I also know that there are a lot of people who, and I know you've run across them, Chris, who they say, if you just do what you love, the money will follow. And some people will do what they love, and for some reason they forgot to lay out the breadcrumbs, and the money's not following. And so the frustration is with, in a manner of speaking, the metaphysical community or the spiritual community, because you're sitting there going, "Well, wait a minute! I did what you told me to do. Why isn't this working?"
Right. Well, and that's really why we wrote this book, Richard, because as I think you know, Janet and I wrote a New York Times bestseller called The Passion Test many years ago. We've been teaching people how to discover their passions and connect with their purpose for more than a decade now. And today there's over 1,400 Passion Test facilitators in more than 50 countries. It's been featured in O Magazine, Success Magazine, and articles and radio and TV interviews all over the world. And yet there's one question that people invariably ask us after they go through this simple but very powerful process for getting clear on what are the five things that matter most to them in their life, and then how do they get aligned with those things. And that question is, how do I make this real? How do I do just what you're talking about, Richard? You know, how do I make a living? How do I meet my responsibilities and follow my passions at the same time? And Your Hidden Riches is our answer to that, because there are many answers to that question, obviously, but this is our unique answer to that question, because what we've learned is that rituals are what make things real. And if you want to live a passionate life, you've discovered your passion, but you want to live it, the way you make it real is by creating rituals around it. If you think about in our society, we use rituals to take things that are abstract and make them concrete, to make them real in our lives. For example, when two people get married, marriage is an abstract concept, but the way we make it real is with a wedding ceremony, a ritual. And that ritual allows this thing that is very amorphous to feel very tangible and real and substantial and significant. When we install a new leader for our country, a new president, there's a whole set of rituals that are gone through for that, including this massive inauguration ceremony. And when we use those rituals, then we feel like, ah, we really have a new leader. This is something, we've taken that thing that's abstract and made it concrete. And when young men or young women finish their studies and they're about to go out into the world, we celebrate and acknowledge that accomplishment with a ritual we call a graduation ceremony.
Let me ask you something real quick.
Makes it real.
Let me ask you something real quick in regards to that. The converse, though, can be somewhat destructive, meaning that, or maybe regressive is a better word, because in the American, North American culture and society, there is no ritual. And we've dealt with the subject before. There's no ritual that says you are now a man, you are now a woman, you have reached adulthood. But in other cultures, for example, the Jewish culture, you have the bar mitzvah at 13. The only problem in the American society is that a 13-year-old who's had his bar mitzvah is not viewed as an adult. They're 13 years old. They're still a child. Whereas I'm sure in the olden the days gone by, they were thought of as a man. In some, and I've read about, and we've had programs where we've talked about, African tribes, where they take the boy out as a child, and he comes back and is treated like a man. And of course, again, the same thing in regards to women. So I'm just wondering about the lack of ritual. Can we take a look at, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but have you taken a look at civilizations or societies where they didn't have ritual, and maybe that was part of the reason maybe for their downfall or why they didn't thrive to the level that others did?
Well, what we've looked at, Richard, is we've looked at cultures all around the globe, and what we've seen is that anything in any culture which is significant or considered to be special, important or substantial in the culture's life gets enshrined in ritual. And it's a universal thing. And in terms of the life transition ritual that you talked about, it's another reason why we wrote this book, is because we believe that rituals are what serve as the glue in a society. They're the things that hold families together. And in our modern achievement-oriented world, we become disconnected from each other. We have lost the connection to ritual that allowed that connection with others to happen. And as a result, we've lost many of these traditions. And that's part of the reason we believe that, for example, 25% of women use antidepressants these days, women between the ages of 25 and 55. It's the reason why antidepressant use has gone up 400 times since the mid-80s, why a third of the U.S. population is considered obese.
Wow.
These are issues that we as a culture face, and they're born out of people's unhappiness, out of their finding that life isn't working for them. I mean, you look at the third leading cause of suicide third leading cause of death among teenagers is suicide, and that sort of statistic can be directly tied to our disconnection from rituals. You don't see those sorts of statistics in traditional cultures that are deeply steeped in ritual. And if I can just address this point that you made about life transitions, while we were writing this book, we interviewed a wonderful woman who was raised in the Yoruban tradition in Nigeria. And her life was filled with ritual, but she told us this one specific story that had such a huge impact on me, because she said that about a year before she was about to go through that physical change where she would begin having a monthly period, that the elder women of the village sat down and started having regular meetings with her, and they told her that she was about to enter into a glorious and wonderful time in her life, that as a woman, she was in a very special position of being a co-creator of life, and that, in fact, no man could take birth, could come into this life without going through a woman's womb, and therefore she had a very precious and important role to play in the life of their community and of the world. And so when the time actually came where she started this transition, where her body started menstruating, then she was so excited, and she ran in and told her mom, and her mom was all excited, and she went around the village and got all the other women, and they made a big feast, and they put this girl up on in front of the whole village, and they honored her and they celebrated her. The elder women sat with her again and connected her with her ancestors, the tradition that she came from. And she said that rituals like that, even though this woman has gone to Oxford University, now lives in Los Angeles, she said rituals like that created such a strong sense of self for her that she never had any doubt about her own value. She always felt beautiful. She always felt that she had a significant role to play in life. And that's so different, I think, than what most young girls go through when they are raised in our Western society.
Very much so, and men as well. I was asking this question, and really actually in an attempt also to have on the program Robert Bly, who wrote Iron John, which used in a men's group that I was a part of back in the early 90s. Where the three of us, and there were only three of us primarily. We had a few other gentlemen who came in and then they left. But the main body, the three of us, we would go hiking. And we would go hiking in the hills around Phoenix, Arizona. And one of the lessons, of course, was having to do with what was referred to as the catabasis or bottoming out, if you will, and those types of things. And I would ask the question, when does a boy become a man? Is it when he turns 16? Is it when he turns 18? Has his first sexual experience, learns to drive, votes, goes off to war, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, marries and so forth. And I remember having an experience, and this was during this time of this men's group went on a camping trip, and not to go into too much detail, but an event happened on that camping trip where I actually could see at that point that at that moment, that was my transition. Now, it wasn't a ceremony. It was a little dust up between myself and one of the other campers that I was with. But it was because I stood my ground, and I wouldn't normally do that.
Right.
And I remember sharing this with my mother at the dinner table with the rest of the family. And rather than, isn't that wonderful? It's about time. And I thought, man. But
wouldn't it have been so much easier on you? And wouldn't you have a much greater sense of what you were going through if that was encased in a ritual, if that was enshrined
yes.
in a ritual
oh,
where
absolutely.
You had the opportunity to go through a challenge and
yeah.
and prove yourself and be treated as a man when you came out of that experience?
Oh, yeah. I mean, similar to the ceremonies I went through as a child, going through confirmation and First Communion and First Confession in the Catholic faith, because I felt like I was progressing through that process, of becoming,
right.
I didn't know exactly what I was becoming, but but as a child, you just kind of, you're allowed to do these things. I will say that my mother gave me a great deal of latitude at one point, 16 years of age, delivering newspapers. One Sunday morning, I come home, I'm burned out from the number of papers I was delivering, and it was time to go to church, and I said, I don't want to go, and she says, okay. And I thought, well, that's weird, because every other time I would do that, no, you get up, get dressed, let's go. This time she said no. And it was years later that I finally asked her why. And she says, it's because I didn't want you to turn away from the faith, which I never did. It doesn't serve me in the same context. I'm no longer practicing, but I never turned my back. I have a great love and reverence for and so forth. And I think that that was probably one of the best things that she ever did for me. But it also inculcated in me a longing to search. And that's part of what we do on this program, is we're looking for those new ways of living. Ritual, what's interesting, though, it sounds to me like you and Janet, what you are doing is you are actually, by taking us forward as a civilization, you're reaching back into our past as far as the way things used to be in terms of using ritual. Go ahead.
Well, and doing that in a modern context.
Yes.
You know, what's so great about today is that, interestingly enough, we adopted the scientific method some 400 years ago, which has had many great benefits for our society and our civilization, but it had the side benefit of we sort of tossed away things that we thought were somehow not scientific or valuable, and many of those things, among them, were rituals, right? But today, science has gotten to the point of recognizing that there's more than meets the eye, if you will. And so there was an article that was published in Scientific American last year by two Harvard sociologists at Harvard Business School. And what the article was titled, Why Rituals Work. And what they said in that article is that rituals work whether you believe they do or not, that they actually have an impact on the results and the outcomes that you get. And I think really the reason for that is because the power of our own intentions, each of us, we don't always recognize, but that we create the life that we're living in large part as a result of the thoughts and the intentions that we hold. And unfortunately, most people are doing that unconsciously, and so they create a life that they really don't want to live. You know, one of the things we talk about in Your Hidden Riches is that every one of us is born with a unique design for our life. And our job when we take birth is to figure out what is that design and then to get aligned with it. Unfortunately, most people find themselves going down the river of life and crashing up against the rocks and the boulders and the branches and the brambles along the side of the river. And that's really just life's way of giving us feedback that, look, you're out of alignment with the design for your life. You know, come on, get back on course. And what rituals do is they serve as a way to take the boat of your life and bring it back into the center of the river. And when you're in the center of the river, then life flows. Then it's fun and it's enjoyable. And it doesn't mean that there aren't challenges or some rapids along the way. But it does mean that life becomes an amazing adventure, that you're looking forward to what's coming around the next bend. And so rituals serve as that way of helping us to get aligned with our purpose, get aligned with our reason for being here on this earth, and then to be able to do activities and to make contributions that are fulfilling and meaningful to us.
You know, you raise a very interesting point that I'd like to have you elaborate a little bit on as well, even further. And we were talking before we started about money and finances and so forth, and about my observations about economists. My favorite quote is from Harry Truman, who said, you can lay all the economists you want end to end, and they'll still all point in different directions. And he's absolutely right. But that's the frustration. And I listen to the economic news from time to time, and I hear some days the numbers are negative. They're not good. And I can see that. Okay. So in a dualistic world, that I can see that. But then when the numbers come out and they're good, they're plus numbers, and yet there are still economists who aren't happy. And I've asked economists over the years, okay, so what numbers would make you happy? And I never get a response. Because it's as if
there aren't any,
because apparently they just, as economists, they just enjoy being miserable, and it doesn't matter how good the numbers are, they're not good enough. And maybe that ties into what you're talking about in terms of the future. In 2008, when the economic downturn began, at least as they say officially began, but we didn't know this for another year and a half, but oh yeah, this began back then. They did not, I would hear the phrases that we've never been down this road before. This has never happened before in human history. So we just don't know what's going to happen down the road. And yet they would come up with solutions they said would help. Well, how do you come up with solutions for a path you've never been on before? And what I'm trying to bring this full circle to is that we, as individuals, you and I, Chris, we don't know what's around the corner. I may walk out of here after the interview to go grab a bite to eat and get hit by a bus, and I don't know that's coming. And even if I'm looking both ways on a one-way street and the light's red down there and I step out there and a bus is coming from the other direction, bam, it's over. But I still go out and I do this without fear. I'm not concerned. Hopefully somewhat anticipatory of expectations for, you know, maybe a new radio show that might bring in more money, or a new venture that would bring new adventure and so forth. But again, we just don't know. Whereas when you talk about some of these institutions, they don't know either, and yet they've generated all this emotion, and they get us all involved in that emotion. And it can be extremely disheartening when you talk about going down our own path of purpose with passion, and even using ritual in the process of devoiding, divorcing ourselves from the socially ingrained emotional responses that we are told we're supposed to have.
Well, and this is one of the great values of ritual, is that rituals are particularly significant when they help us to change the mental and emotional patterns that don't serve us. And I have to say, Richard, you know, when we talk in your Hidden Riches about rituals, we're not talking about so much about religious rituals, although there are beautiful rituals in religious traditions all around the world, and we're not talking about superstition, we're not talking about habits. You know, we all have good and bad habits, those things that have developed unconsciously in our lives. What we mean by rituals are conscious, intentional practices you choose to make habitual. In other words, you do them over and over again because they improve your life. And part of our hope with this book is that we can reframe the way people look at and think about rituals, because we all have these ways of being, these patterns, which maybe don't help us live a fulfilling life. And rituals are one of the most powerful ways that we can change those patterns and create new ones that are constructive and useful and valuable for our lives. You were talking about money earlier, and so let me give a real simple example of this. In the ancient system of feng shui, Chinese system of feng shui, the color red is considered to be valuable to attract wealth or to attract income. So maybe you think, well, that sounds good, so I'm going to go out and get a red wallet, and I'm also going to set the intention that I'm going to increase my income and I'm going to decrease my expenses so that I have more disposable income. Now you get the red wallet, and whether or not there are any esoteric benefits of having a red wallet, what do you think happens, Richard, every time you pull that wallet out of your pocket and go to spend money?
Your thoughts go to the intention that you set forth.
Exactly, because your intention was tied to the getting of the red wallet. So every time you bring that wallet out, it's going to help you think. So now, instead of just going out and spending money, you're now consciously making a choice. Is this expenditure going to be supporting this intention that I have of increasing my disposable income, or is it something that I could really do without? And I don't need to spend it right now. So it's a simple example, but rituals have that purpose. In fact, you know, as we wrote this book, Richard, what we discovered was that rituals are the unspoken secret of all successful people. Everyone that we have talked to or met and in many cases read about who is very successful has incorporated rituals into their lives. And what we found is that athletes use rituals to perform at their best and to stay calm even under intense pressure, that musicians and artists use rituals to spark their creativity. Business leaders use rituals to create cohesive teams and strong corporate cultures. And celebrities and people who are very well known use rituals to create a balance between their personal life and their public life. And the thing that I found so fascinating about this is that while many people who are not as successful have abandoned the rituals in their life because they think they have to do more to get ahead, to achieve more, to be more successful, that they just have to work more, you know? It's as if the ideal was that if I could just work 24 hours a day, then I would be really successful. And yet we all know that on some level that's not true, even though many people drive themselves, you know, through this endless cycle. And what you see in successful people is that they have created rituals in their life to be able to take the times when they need to perform, they need to be at their best, and get them into a place where they can. And so just one example, I love watching World Cup soccer personally. And there is a player for Britain's team called Leighton Barnes that plays for the British team, and every time he comes out on the playing field, you'll see he kneels down and he unties his shoes and then he ties them again. And I love this example because it makes clear this difference between habits and rituals. You know, that's not a good habit. It's not a bad habit. It's a ritual that he's created. And so why does he do that? Now, in his own words, he says it helps him get his head on straight. But what I would say is that what he's doing is he's using that ritual to create a division or a separation between his everyday daily life, where he's doing the things we all do, and that time when he goes out on the playing field where he has to be at his best. He has to perform as best he can. He has to stay focused, even when there are thousands of fans screaming in the stands or millions of people watching on television. And so that simple ritual is a way for him to get himself in a mental and emotional state where he's ready to perform at his best. Recently, I had the chance to talk with Jack Canfield. You probably know Richard, mm-hmm. is the author of Chicken Soup for the Soul and Success Principles. And Jack does the same thing. You know, Jack speaks all over the world to groups. And every time before he goes on stage, he has a whole set of rituals that he goes through that he was describing, a visualization exercises, and then he has an expression of gratitude that he says before he goes on stage so that he can be of greatest service to the people in that audience. And what he's doing with that ritual is he's getting himself, again, in a mental and emotional state where he's not thinking about himself, you know, am I going to be okay? Am I going to do a good job or not? Are they going to like me or not? And the fact is, for all of us, when we're in a situation where other people are watching us or looking at us, what most people do, or many people, I'll say, do, is that they're thinking about, am I going to perform okay? And am I going to be all right? Are they going to like me or not? Are they going to applaud me or not? And that's when we make mistakes. That's when our performance is less, actually. Hmm. And so what Jack is doing is he's putting himself in a state where he says, how can I serve these people? How can I contribute to their lives? And when his attention is on that, he's not thinking about himself, and so he's fully present for the people in the audience, and they feel it. And that's why Jack Canfield's considered one of the best speakers in the whole transformational industry.
Yeah, and extraordinarily gifted, there's no question about it. I'd like to, when we come back from our break, talk a little bit about something you said in regards to, I'm gonna paraphrase it in this context, our lot in life. The family we were born into and our genes and all of that aspect of it, too, and in light of all this. We're talking with co-author Chris Atwood, he and his wife Janet Bray, along with Sylvia Dvorak, and we're talking about your hidden riches, unleashing the power of ritual to create a life of meaning and purpose. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay tuned.
Tell me your story.
I'm Richard Dugan, and you're listening to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And we're back here with Chris Atwood, co-author, along with his wife, Janet Bray, and Sylvia Dvorak, of Your Hidden Riches, Unleashing the Power of Ritual to Create a Life of Meaning and Purpose. And you have some, I think, some really neat diagrams in here that I wanted to share with our listeners. They can get these when they pick up a copy of the book as well, that gives sort of an overview of one's life, not so much from birth to death, but just in terms of what makes us who we are. We have an outer life, and then we have an inner life that's made up of multiple layers. I went through a program that used to refer to that, the same kind of concept, as sort of an M&M. And there was the chocolate coating, the sweet chocolate coating, and the hard candy shell. And then on the inside, it was either a nut, usually a peanut, or it was filled with chocolate, but it was still layers. And right. That if your two layers were not aligned, that your life really wasn't going to flow real well. And I want to talk about that, especially in light of something you said in our last segment about sort of a certain element of a predestination, so to speak, that I think we all struggle with. Is this just my lot in life? This may be what someone might say is, I'm just living from paycheck to paycheck, and I see all these other people like a Jack Canfield, okay, or an Oprah Winfrey, and look at all that they've got. And I have worked hard for years and years and years and years. Where's mine? And I remember somebody talking about this, and I says, well, you know, that's all fine, well, and good, but you know how well that goes over in the metaphysical realm? Not real well. It doesn't work because that's ego-based, but I understand it. So can we talk a little bit about that in as much as it's great to be in the zone spiritually. It's great to be in the ritual and the example of the European soccer athlete who has this ritual that gets his head on. He's making that transition from everyday life to the playing field, if you will. And now he's going to be on a whole different mindset. And I really do believe that when we're living our lives and we're on purpose and we're doing our thing, we will do the same kind of thing. We will be in that zone. But we can't be there 24/7. We'd like to be. It would be so nice because then the rest of the world wouldn't agitate us. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But our egos get in there.
Well, what rituals do, Richard, is they give us a way to come back to that place again and again.
Mm.
You know, when in chapter 2 of Your Hidden Riches, we talk about what we call foundation rituals, which are just for that purpose of providing a structure, a routine in your life that brings you back into that state of flow when you've come out of it. And the knowledge that's in chapter 2 is based on some very ancient wisdom and knowledge, but the way we've broken it down is in menus, so people can choose one or two of those things, and we suggest implement them for 30 days and see how they affect your life. And if you find that you're happier and you're enjoying more, great, now go and pick another one or two rituals and add those to your life. But the value of incorporating rituals in your day and throughout your life is that we aren't always in flow. There aren't always things aren't always going wonderfully. And rituals are one of the most powerful ways for us to come back to our center, to what we call in the book your spiritual core, your transcendental core. And when you reconnect with that on a regular basis, then that brings you back into the flow of your life. It allows you to recover quickly from setbacks and what other people might call failures and be able to pick yourself up and move forward. And, you know, it's interesting. When you look at the research on happiness, they said that researchers have found that about 50% of happiness appears to be determined by our genes, only 10% by our life circumstances. 40% of happiness depends on our daily activities and how we conduct ourselves in our day-to-day activities. And so rituals have the ability of affecting that 40%, and even some researchers say that a ritual has the ability even to affect change on a genetic level. But whether or not you accept that, the rituals have the ability to affect a very significant part of our experience of life and our happiness in life. And now, I just have to say one thing, because you said it a couple of times. I just want for all the listeners to know that Janet Bray Atwood is my ex-wife. We were once married for about 5 years. She's still my best friend, my business partner, and when I remarried about 8.5 years ago and we had our first child, my wife asked Janet if she would be the godmother of our children. And we now have three, a 6-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 7-month-old, or 8-month now. And to be honest with you, we have a very unique relationship. But the only reason that relationship is even possible is because both Janet and I have been actively incorporating rituals in our life that have allowed us to be able to to stay connected and care about each other, even as we redefined our relationship, and my wife as well, through the rituals that she's learned and been practicing, was able to accept Janet as someone that is very dear to us, even though my relationship with her is different.
That is extraordinary in our day and time. It truly is.
It's one of the things I think we're most happy about, but also to us is one of the greatest demonstrations of the power of ritual. Because without ritual, there's no question that the time that we were married was not an easy time for either one of us. And there's no question that without our rituals, that we probably wouldn't be talking to each other. But as a result of being able to step out of the boundaries of our past beliefs and concepts and thinking, that we've been able to recreate our relationship in a way that is really rich and rewarding for all of us, for my kids, because Janet's one of the best gift givers in the world, and so they love when their godmother, Janet, comes to visit, because they get all sorts of gifts. But the other part of it is that those rituals have allowed us to create this rich and amazing relationship that, for example, for Janet, she isn't able to have children. So as a result of being the godmother of our children, she at least has that experience that she otherwise wouldn't have.
Yeah.
And isn't that fabulous?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I think that when you can integrate someone from your past into your present life in such a way that is harmonious, I always thought it was really strange. I mean, and I myself, I've been through a divorce and I have since remarried. And I thought I invested 15 years plus of my life and now this is no more? Something's not right there. That doesn't make any sense. That you'd walk away mad?
Right.
And I didn't walk away mad. Because I even shared with her at one time several years ago on the phone that I had never stopped loving her. This wasn't about that. And I think that when we can get to that kind of a place with people we've had relationships with that hadn't turned out quite the way we'd thought, it doesn't necessarily mean that those relationships have to end. They're going to change, but they don't necessarily have to end, because this, it sounds to me like Janet is still contributing to your growth as you to hers and to your present wife and the family in such a way that you don't want to lose that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's completely true. I mean, spending time around Janet, for anyone who's been around her, it's a magical experience. And our kids get this amazing, wonderful, magical godmother, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful for that. The thing is what many people ask themselves, well, okay, so this all sounds well and good, but how do I incorporate rituals into my life? And in your Hidden Riches, we talk about everyday rituals and ceremonial rituals. Ceremonial rituals are things like weddings, and they're more involved, and they have a different purpose. Mm-hmm. Everyday rituals are really simple things to incorporate in your life. They're not something to add to your to-do list. There's not just one more thing that I have to do. Rather, they're things that you take from what you're already doing and begin to make those things conscious and intentional. And I love Benjamin Franklin's ritual. Every morning when he get up, he would ask himself, what good will I do today? And then at night before he went to bed, he'd ask himself, what good did I do today? And I've loved that so much that my wife and I have incorporated that in the rituals that we do with my oldest daughter, who just started school. We will bring her to school. On the way to school, she has her word of wisdom, which is kind of her open eyes meditation. And then we play the gratitude game or the appreciation game. But my favorite ritual is that when we get to school, I'll ask her, honey, what are you going to create today? And she'll set three intentions for her day. And then at the end of the day, we have our bedtime rituals. And so I'll ask her, honey, what did you create today? and we'll go through her intentions. And this is the best part for both her and me, is that if for every intention that came true, she gets 5 kisses, and we both love that. So what I have loved about this, Richard, is that I'm in the U.S. right now. My wife is German, and we live in Germany most of the time. So I was talking to her the other day, and she said she took Sophie to school, and it was a rainy, overcast day, and it was really gloomy. And when Sophie said her intentions for the day, she said, I want to have a bright, sunny day, and I want to see a rainbow. And so she set those intentions, and my wife internally, she didn't say this to Sophie, but she was kind of thinking, well, honey, that's a nice thing to think, but, you know, the weather forecast is that it's going to continue raining all day long, so, you know, that may not come to pass, right? She gets home. Half an hour after my wife gets home, the sun comes out, the clouds part. It's a beautiful, brilliant day. She goes to pick up Sophie at school, and she says, honey, do you see what you created? And Sophie, and this is the wonderful innocence of children, she had completely forgotten about her intention, right? Which is probably one of the secrets of these things actually coming to pass. But yeah. When she realized that it was a bright, sunny day and that had been her intention, she had this huge smile broke out on her face. And then as they're walking home from school, they see this gorgeous rainbow across the sky. My wife took a picture of it and sent it to me because she was so blown away, right? And I love that ritual because I love that our children have the opportunity to begin to see at this age that they can create what they experience in their life, that they can create their reality. And whether or not the sun had come out and her rainbow came to be, at the very least she's having the opportunity to learn that she has a choice about how she responds to the things that happen in her life. And this is one of the values that ritual can have. I have to say, in families, rituals are probably more important than any other place. You know, in our research, studies have found that families that maintain consistent rituals for 5 years or more, things like regular mealtime together and those sorts of things, that the kids will score higher on standardized tests. They're less likely to have mental and emotional problems when they get older, less likely to be drug or alcohol addicted.
You know, you make me think about my family. I grew up in a large family, brother and 4 sisters. And the ritual that flashed to my mind when you spoke of that was around the holidays, as we are, and specifically around the celebration and the ritual and the ceremony of Advent. And the Advent wreath. Yes. Now, there was a little squabbling as to who got to light the candles, but, you know, there was something about that, that if we didn't do it, it was as if, and even though it was only once a year, if we didn't do it, there was something missing.
Yeah.
And we did it together, and of course, another aspect of the holidays for us was caroling around the neighborhood, and if we didn't do that, there was something missing.
Yeah, these kind of rituals are the things that make these experiences special. Remember, I said at the beginning of our interview that rituals make things real, and so the rituals you're describing make these holidays feel real. Right?
Yeah.
They give some substance, something, they give some significance to this particular time of the year. And truthfully, if we didn't have the rituals, would there be any difference between this time of year and any other time of year?
Exactly. Exactly.
There wouldn't be.
Yeah.
But we make the experience of joy and peace and giving and all of these qualities real by the rituals that we create around them. Now, you know, unfortunately, some people have abandoned rituals because the rituals of their childhood were not so fulfilling. You know, they'd be dragged to a Thanksgiving dinner or a Christmas dinner, and none of the family members would speak to each other, or they'd get in huge fights, and you know, the kids would want to run away. And so they've kind of abandoned those things, unfortunately. And that's why in this day and age, the opportunity that each of us has is to recognize that it's not the rituals that are at fault. And you know, I think it's one of the statements of the value of ritual is that we believe that it should be meaningful. It should be valuable. If it's not meaningful, then why would I want to participate in it? And so we sort of push it aside because we've been strapped with these rituals that have no meaning for us. So the lesson to take from that is that when we create rituals in our lives, they should be rituals that are deeply meaningful to us. It doesn't matter if they're meaningful to anyone else. You know, you mentioned, Richard, that we're at the holiday season, and I'd like to share a great ritual for the holiday season, if I can. Is
please.
That all right?
Absolutely, please.
Yeah. So whether it's Thanksgiving or Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever, when you have the family and friends all together, a great ritual to do is to get a video camera and invite each member of the family to be appreciated by the others. And you just take a minute and go around the circle, and for each person, just the members that are there say, you know, what I appreciate about you, what I love and appreciate about you, and the reason why I appreciate that is. When you say why, then it takes it to a deeper level. It gives deeper significance to that experience. And our friend Marcy Shymoff, who's the New York Times bestselling author of Happy for No Reason and Love for No Reason, she tells the story of how her family did this and videotaped it. And now her parents have passed, but she still has that videotape, and she says every time, every holiday, when that comes up again, she plays that video, and she's there with her parents appreciating her. And she says tears come to her eyes every single time. But what an amazing gift to be able to give to each other.
Yeah.
That even when you're not together, even when some members of the family may not be alive, to be able to have that expression of what I love and appreciate about you.
I had a ritual with my first wife where every Christmas, the 5 days prior, we would listen to an audiobook. And it just so happens it was a book that I recorded for a radio reading service for the blind and visually impaired that she had requested a copy of that I hand-delivered, and that's how we met, and the rest is history. And so we did that for 6 or 8, maybe 10 years. I would throw it up on the reel-to-reel, and I would play it. If you don't know what a reel-to-reel is, Google it. And it was really interesting. And I still have the tapes, and I still have the machine that I recorded them on. And that was a ritual that was meaningful to me. And and when I would listen to that, just because of the story and the impact, because of how I came to that story, it was actually given to me. The book was given to me by my best friend that I went through grade school, high school, and college with. We're still good friends. We still stay in touch. And I even had an opportunity to interview the author before he passed away. And so that is something that I look back on now, and of course it has even more meaning because of some of these other elements.
Yeah.
But and it was simple. It was nothing elaborate, you know.
The rituals don't have to be elaborate to be effective.
Yeah.
And when you have a ritual like the one you're describing, what it does, it adds depth and richness to life.
Yeah.
And beyond that, what I would say to everyone's listening, that if there's something that you want to have in your life that's not there currently, then set an intention and create rituals around that thing. Because again, rituals make things real. Rituals are ways that you can take something that is not yet in existence and you can make it a real and tangible part of your life. And what you did with that ritual, Richard, is you created a string of memories, a richness to your experience of life that you can go back to again and again and again. But it really applies to any area of your life.
Yeah.
That when you create rituals around the things you choose to have in your life, then you make those things real, you make them tangible, you make them significant in your life. And as a result, your life becomes richer and more full. That's why I said earlier that rituals are a way of taking the boat of your life and moving it away from the shallows and the boulders and the branches and the brambles and bring it back into the center of your life, where now, even though there are challenges, you're able to flow and move through those things, and life becomes this great adventure, which is what it was meant to be.
How do you keep from running the risk of creating a ritual that every time you practice it, if you will, or you go into the ritual, that you end up reliving these emotions from the past, in the sense that, okay, your example of Marcy Shimoff, wonderful example. But it seems to me that we've also created some rituals in our lives, especially around the holidays, that tend to resurrect old emotional patterns, if you will, or old pains or something of this nature. And that's not necessarily, well, let me ask you, is that necessarily a beneficial thing? How is that useful for us?
Yeah, so I'll come back to the way we defined ritual in the beginning.
Okay.
The way we use the term ritual is rituals are conscious, intentional practices that improve our lives. And if we notice, like I was talking with a friend not long ago, and he said, you know, I've noticed that whenever I go visit my sister, even though I've done a lot of internal work, even though I feel I'm a much bigger person than I was as a child, I find myself dropping into these old patterns from when we were kids that were not so pleasant, right?
Yeah.
And so he said, I created a ritual for myself. And I decided every time I go and visit my sister, when I get to the screen door, as I'm opening the screen door, I consciously set the intention that I will be loving and caring and flexible and open, and that I will be the best brother that I can be. And what I've noticed is that more than 90% of those old patterns just dropped away because I was consciously intending to focus on the things that I loved and appreciated about my sister. And this is what I would say, is that if we notice that we have patterns that bring us unhappiness or memories that are sad or that are... in the book, we share what for us has become a ritual. It's a practice that we've made very conscious and very intentional. It's a system taught by a woman by the name of Byron Katie, who you may have heard of, and it's called The Work of Byron Katie. And when we have concepts, beliefs, thoughts that bring us unhappiness or sadness, whether they're memories or something else, what's most important for us to do is to create the ritual of investigating the truth of those things for us. And that's Byron Katie's, the work of Byron Katie is a simple, easy process to be able to do that. It's just four questions and a turnaround. And in the book, we share that powerful process. But that really, the work of Byron Katie is probably the most fundamental ritual that's allowed Janet and my wife, Doris, and I and our kids to have this amazing relationship that we have, because we were able to let go of these concepts and ideas that were drummed into us as kids and in our culture, that somehow an ex-husband and an ex-wife should not have anything to do with each other, right?
Yeah.
And so we were able to transform that relationship. So, again, it comes down to this idea of conscious, intentional practices to improve your life.
Yeah.
And conscious, intentional means when you notice that you're falling into old patterns that make you unhappy, that bring distress, then to identify those rituals and practices that will help you get out of it. And really, that's one of the reasons why we wrote this book, is the book is filled with ritual, simple, easy-to-do ritual practices to help people deal with virtually any situation in life, whether it's finding their perfect partner, their greatest love, or being able to sustain a relationship over time, or to be able to create more wealth or income in their life, or more health, or be able to have a more connected family, or whatever area of the life it may be, to be able to provide some examples and some practices that people can begin to integrate into their life so that they can improve those areas.
And you even have in here a series of checklists, if you will, in terms of going through the process, for example, how you're spending your time, and you go through and you answer, usually I do this, sometimes I do this, or rarely I have enough time to finish all my work, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it just goes down, and then it's broken down into three or four other areas. Very interesting. And before we run out of time, thank you so much for taking so much time with us here on the program. It's been great having you here. And
thank you.
The book is called Your Hidden Riches, Unleashing the Power of Ritual to Create a Life of Meaning and Purpose, co-authored along with Janet Atwood, along with Sylvia Dvorak. Chris Atwood is my guest. And before we wrap the program up, Chris, three final questions that I put to my guests. The first is, who is Chris Atwood?
That's a great question. And like everyone, it has many answers. So Chris Atwood is a father. He's a husband. He's an ex-husband. He's a business owner. He's an author. But most deeply, what I would say is that Chris Atwood is an individual who loves to love and be loved.
Hmm. I have a phrase I'll share with you off air about that I came up with years ago. Second question is, what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
So my hope is that both through our books and through our programs and through some of the projects that we're working on, that we can help everyone and anyone in the world have access to that knowledge which is going to serve them in taking the next step in their growth and transformation. And so the books that we've been, the Passion Test and Your Hidden Riches, are really small steps along that road. Ultimately, it's my hope and intention to create a lifelong learning network that can connect the very best teachers and trainers and thought leaders in the world with people who are ready for transformation and growth and progress in areas that are important to them to be able to access that.
I have to say, when I watch the news, I'm filled with despair, but when I talk with folks like you, I feel that there is hope for us yet.
Thank you.
And finally, who inspires you?
You know, every day and every week, I'm inspired by the students who come through our programs, by their willingness to open up, to open their hearts and to open their minds and to take steps that are often difficult steps. And that's probably the reason that I love and appreciate the work that I do so much. In my own life, some of my greatest mentors, I had the great fortune and opportunity to study with and learn from His Holiness Maharshi Mahesh Yogi, who brought the Transcendental Meditation Technique to the West. I studied with him for many years. And I also had the opportunity to spend and work very closely with Byron Katie for some time, and out of choice, because her work had such a profound impact on me. So these are the people most directly that inspire me.
Chris, again, thank you so much for taking time with us here on this program for this past hour. It's been extraordinary. And I open the invitation to the four of you, your two co-authors, as well as your wife. If you ever find yourself out here in the Santa Barbara area, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
Thank you so much, Richard. You know, I went to school at UC Santa Barbara, so that would be a great delight.
Oh, wonderful. Well, we look forward to seeing you out here sometime soon. And we look forward to having you folks back with us again here on the program. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Again, the book is Your Hidden Riches, Unleashing the Power of Ritual to Create a Life of Meaning and Purpose. And my guest has been Chris Atwood. Until next time, love to all.